The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by both my co-hosts today, Nathan Gladwell and Gray Oldenburg. Glad to have you back, Gray.
Yes, glad to be back.
All right, let's hop into some AAA here. First story we have is Philadelphia 76ers guard James Harden has opted into his $35.6 million player option for the 2023-2024 season. However, according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, the Sixers and Harden are exploring trade scenarios, and it's expected that he has played his last game in Philadelphia. So, guys, what do you think happens to Harden here, and where do you think he lands?
This could be interesting. Oh, yeah. You know, go ahead first, Nathan.
No. You got some more important to say.
This could be very interesting to see where Harden lands. Obviously, he's been on many different teams in his career, and his kind of journey has been all about these trade requests and him trying to find that perfect team that fits his play style and that sort of thing. I think that's going to be hard to find, but he's been linked so far to the LA Clippers and the New York Knicks, and both of those teams, they would have to probably give up something pretty valuable to get a guy like James Harden, obviously former MVP, and he adds a lot of value to your team, but I don't know if I see the fit in either of those. And it's going to be hard to see where he fits just due to that play style in general.
You know, personally, I think he'd make a great fit with the Clippers organization. You talk about, them just re-signing Russell Westbrook. They already have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And that team has a good amount of bench depth. And I think they're just a few pieces away from being able to, you know, really compete in the playoffs. But for the most part, it's really still up in the air where Harden goes. Right. There's been rumors of Miami, but now that, Miami's in the running to get Dame, I don't see that happening. So really it's just a confusing time, and we won't really know more, until he actually decides to make a move.
Yeah. I'd have to think he goes to the Clippers here. Like y'all mentioned, he's been rumored to go to them. They have Kawhi, they have Paul George, right? Re-sign Russell Westbrook, but with Westbrook there, I'm not sure how Harden fits in. Both those guys are really ball dominant. And you look at Westbrook, he cannot shoot whatsoever. His jumper's really broken, and Harden has had the ball in his hands, I think, to have success. But we saw Harden show the ability to, take a step back and let somebody do the work. We saw with Embiid this season, with him winning MVP and Harden leading the league in assists per game. So I think Harden could fit there, but I'm not sure how well he would. I think a better option would be the New York Knicks. I mean, they got Jalen Brunson, and the 76ers would probably get a better package from the Knicks. They would probably include someone like RJ Barrett. And with the Clippers, you probably would get somebody like Terrence Mann being the best guy in that package. Yeah. So I think it's really up in the air at this point. I think he wants to go to the Clippers, but I think the Knicks will be the best trade package for the Sixers. Moving on to the next story, Portland Trailblazers guard Damian Lillard has requested a trade after 11 seasons with the franchise. According to Shams, Lillard prefers to be traded to the Miami Heat. So do y'all think he ends up with the Heat, or are the Blazers going to not honor the request and trade him somewhere else?
I don't know, because right when this came out, this was heat, immediately going to Miami. But Portland said that they're going to look elsewhere and take offers from elsewhere, and they want the best offer for a guy like Damian Lillard, who's meant so much to that Portland Trailblazers franchise and has been one of their best players. It's hard to see him going somewhere else. I like the Heat fit. I think he would fit really well with a guy like Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. I think he immediately becomes a star on that team and makes the Heat. I mean, I know they went to the finals this year. They were also in the play-in. They lost in the play-in. Let's not forget that. I mean, credit to them for that finals run, but they were the ninth seed going into to the playoffs. So let's slow down a little bit on how good the Heat are. But I do like that fit. I'd be interested, again, they're going to have to give up a lot for a guy like Damian Lillard. I don't know what kind of options they have left to give due to some of those players on the roster being pretty old, and they lost Gabe Vincent and those guys. So it'll be interesting.
Wow. The utter disrespect towards the Miami Heat there, Gray. I don't know about that too much.
Hey, they were very good at the finals, but they were the nine seed. Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's just about what you do with what you have. And they did a lot. So I think they deserve a little bit more credit than you gave them. Anyway, getting back on topic with Dame, I think that Portland would do a huge disservice by not sending him to the team he wants to go to. Obviously, you think about how long he's been there. He's been there 11 years with your franchise. He's been that loyal. He's been through everything. Your terrible decisions, your losing of games, your sucking in the playoffs. So, you know, you kind of owe him a little bit. So if Dame does not go to Miami, because obviously that's where he wants to go, then I will be really confused. And, you know, I will have some, you know, disrespect towards that Portland Trailblazers franchise for doing that to him.
Yeah, I really hope he goes to Miami, because the Blazers owe him to trade him to Miami the way he's been so loyal to that franchise through thick and thin. Then when they traded CJ McCollum for a bag of Doritos, and, you know, all the stuff that went on there with the franchise. I think he fits well with the Heat, like y'all both mentioned, with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. The one thing that worries me is, like Greg mentioned, the lack of assets they have. I'm not sure how willing the Trailblazers are going to be to want a guy like Tyler Hero, who's probably the best asset the Heat can give them. Because you look at what the Blazers have, their best three players are honestly their guards. Anthony Simons, Scoot Henderson, and Shaedon Sharpe. So I'm not sure how willing they're going to want to get a guy like Tyler Hero being the best in the package. There's probably a better trade packages elsewhere, similar with Harden. But I really hope he does end up with the Heat. I think that's going to be exciting to see. Nathan, are you happy that Lillard will be gone with the long-range three hit against the Thunder?
Yeah. Go ahead, get your shots in. You know, I've heard about this all past decade since it happened. You know, but ultimately, it doesn't matter for me. I mean, it was one game. It helped us rebuild our franchise. So with Lillard being gone, you know, I don't really care. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, it was bound to happen at some point. I think he waited way too long. He's in the very back end of his career, and I don't know how much longer he has in the league. So
I mean, but at this point in Nathan's defense, the Thunder are in a much better spot as a franchise and as a team than the stupid Trailblazers are.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Moving on to the next story, ESPN laid off roughly 20 on-air personalities this past week. Some of the notable people include Jeff Van Gundy, who is NBA analyst and part of the most notable NBA broadcasting trio, alongside Mike Breen and Mark Jackson, go-to NFL draft expert Todd McShay, author members of the KJM radio show, that being Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Max Kellerman, David Pollack, who is an analyst for College Football College Game Day, LaFonso Ellis, who is an analyst for Men's College Basketball College Game Day, NBA analyst Jalen Rose, and quarterbacks turn analysts Steve Young and Matt Hasselbeck. So what are y'all's thoughts on these guys and gals losing their jobs?
Wow. I mean, it hurts. It kind of puts a bad taste in your mouth hearing about it. But ESPN is in a weird spot. They just had to pay Pat McAfee, $85 million to be their next primetime slot on that network, which I love that move. I think that's I think Pat McAfee's one of the most, one of the best young analysts and fun radio guys you could possibly hire right now. I think that's a great hire, but that it comes with a cost, and it's going to cost due to what Disney did to ESPN. It's going to hurt a lot of ESPN shows. A lot of them were canceled. A lot of these guys were fired and laid off just all of a sudden because of ESPN's decisions over the past few years and some of their unnecessary hires. I'm not including Pat McAfee in that because I think that's a good one, but it's really tough to see. And I'm really going to miss some of these guys hearing what they had to say. A lot of the times because of how bad it was, a lot of the times because of how good it was. I don't know. ESPN is going to be completely different, completely throughout the board, starting next, you know, sports season. So I guess we'll see. I'm going to miss a lot of these guys though.
You know, it's kind of disgusting the way that ESPN just threw these guys to the side. You know, the whole Pat McAfee situation. I mean, I can't remember a time when someone like that was paid so much to just talk about sports. I mean, that's an incredible amount of money. That's like an NBA contract right there. So for the fact that he's getting paid that much is crazy. I think that, you know, he should have been able to take a pay cut or something like that to help out, you know, some of his colleagues. But the fact that ESPN has to let all these guys go, I definitely will miss a lot of them. Some of them I don't really care for, but so I think they still deserve to have their job no matter what. And it's, you know, I get the whole situation with Disney and making ESPN make cutbacks, but it just still hurts at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's sad to see all these guys and gals lose their jobs and be laid off and stuff like that. One guy I'm really disappointed got let go is Jeff Van Gundy. I mean, ever since I can remember, he's been doing the finals with Mike Breen and then eventually Mark Jackson. It's going to be really weird to watch an NBA game, watch an NBA finals, and not hear Mike Breen try to call the game, and then Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson talking about what they had for dinner last night. but it's just so sad for that. And then, you know, losing David Pollack, who I am so familiar with what he did for college football, College Game Day. I think that's just a huge loss for them. I think ESPN has gone downhill as of late. There's still a couple people on there I like to watch, like Richard Jefferson and J.J. Redick. But a lot of it has become people just yelling back and forth. I mean, you talk about Stephen A. Smith, the guy who does it with, I think it's Mad Dog now. They just yell.
Oh, what a clown, show. Dude. What a clown.
I mean, they just yell back and forth. It doesn't even feel like an argument when they're talking about sports. It just feels like a screaming match. And I hate to see that. And then you got Kendrick Perkins, who I think all three of us here think is an absolute bozo.
Why does he have a job?
But I have been personally injured by Kendrick Perkins.
Just on this topic, why does Bill Walton still have a job?
Oh, my God.
All these guys got laid off, but we kept Bill Walton? Okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say people deserve to lose their jobs, but I mean, when you're making these cutbacks, I think there's...
Make the right cutbacks.
Exactly. But I, once again, I don't want people to lose their jobs, but this was just a tough thing to do, and losing these key people to ESPN is a huge loss for just a station, and that was really at the height of its peak, a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the last story we have. Netflix is purchasing the rights to a 10-episode docuseries focus on the 1990s Dallas Cowboys and owner Jerry Jones, when the purchase was roughly $50 million. So we all watch this.
There you go. Yeah, I like these kind of things. Obviously, I'm not a big fan of the Cowboys. I don't really have any feelings towards Jerry Jones at all. But I'm not going to be watching games that I've watched before. I was born in 2002, so I can't do that. But I'm going to watch it as a sports fan, and the success that they had in the early 90s, and the way that they were able to turn the team around, and some of the money situations that were happening with Jones and the Cowboys. And I think it could have a lot of stories. I hope Netflix really takes it like they did with The Last Dance, or like ESPN did with The Last Dance, or that was Netflix. If they can kind of angle it that way, I mean, obviously none of these are really perfect docuseries. Obviously they bought it for $50 million. It needs to be very, very good, but it's not like this is going to be a huge production. It's going to be a lot about story. And if you tell the story the right way, it could be really good. And that's all that matters to me as a sports fan.
Yeah, this is something I'm not planning on watching. I typically don't watch, you know, other team stuff. Even if it was the Saints, I probably wouldn't watch them. these type of series just, you know, don't fit. It doesn't keep me intrigued. I don't like the whole, like, storytelling mode of it. But I'm sure there's other fans out there. I'm sure there's Cowboy fans out there wanting to relive the glory days of, times they actually were able to win football games and, you know, win the playoffs. So, you know, that's good for them. I'm sure it will be, a very highly watched series.
Yeah, I think I'll watch it kind of like Gray. I mean, just to mention what he said, I mean, we were all born after this happened. The only thing we know about this is from what we read in books and articles and stuff like that. So we don't really know, and this is going to be our first experience with the 1990s Dallas Cowboys in video form. And just what I've read, I mean, they were pretty flamboyant and very vocal with what they did. Yep. So I think it's a great thing for the Netflix to get involved with. I'm really excited to see the behind-the-scenes stuff, because what I've, you know, talking to my step-grandfather and the locker rooms in the NFL and stuff like that, they were pretty
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting is the best word you can think of there. So I'm not sure how much they're going to be able to show with how interesting those locker rooms were, but I'm excited to see what they do with this, and hopefully it's good, like The Last Dance was. All right, Nathan, this is our last week at USFL. What do you got for us?
Yeah, try not to cry here, because we don't have any more USFL to talk about after this. No more football for a while, actually. Enjoy this last little piece. Anyway, let's go ahead and jump right into it. The 2023 USFL Championship was won by the Birmingham Stallions 28-12. Stallions going back-to-back, of course, winning last year's inaugural championship. Championship game MVP was Birmingham Stallions wide receiver Deion Kane. And we'll talk about what he did here in a little bit. And the Maulers really dominated the time of possession in this game with pretty much 34 minutes to just 26 for the Stallions. They also ran 11 more plays than the Stallions, but the Stallions still managed to outgain the Maulers 357 yards to 202 for the Maulers. First of all, you know, as usual, let's go ahead and jump right into the Stallions offense and what they were able to do. 7.1 yards per play, 1 out of 2 on red zone touchdowns. Alex Magoo, of course, the MVP, doing what he usually does, 18 of 25, 243 passing yards, 4 passing touchdowns. He also had 9 carries for 64 yards, did have a weird fumble lost that we'll talk about in the game here in a little bit, but he was also the team's leading rusher. Looking at both running backs, starting off with running back C.J. Marable, 8 carries, 48 yards, and 4 receptions for 25 yards, and Ricky Persons, 6 carries for 38 yards. So both running backs didn't have huge games, but they definitely got it done on the ground when they needed to. And of course, moving on to wide receiver Deion Kane, 4 receptions, 70 yards, and 3 touchdowns. That was just crazy alone what he was able to do. He made some contested catches in this game, which was really, really cool to see. He was also joined by tight end Jay Sternberger with 3 receptions for 65 yards and wide receiver Davion Davis for 3 receptions, 55 yards, and a touchdown. His offense, you know, it struggled a little bit in the first quarter. They didn't score any points in the first quarter, which is weird to see from a Stallions team that has really been dominant in the first half of games all season long. But, you know, they finally got into their rhythm and they were able to get it done in the second half. Moving on to their defense, 6 sacks, 9 tackles for losses, no interceptions, but 6 passes suspended and 1 fumbled recovery. Defensive back JoJo Tillery leading the charge with 10 tackles, 6 solo, and 1 sack. Also joined by cornerback Lorenzo Burns, 6 tackles for 6 solo tackles and 2 tackles for losses. This defense really got after it. And one thing to note, Scooby Wright didn't even have a tackle in this game. So, you know, we expected them to be kind of a big factor going into this, especially the rest of the season. And he didn't really, he wasn't able to have the type of production we were expecting him to have. Moving on to the Maulers, 3.3 yards per play, 0 out of 1 on red zone touchdowns. Quarterback Troy Williams, 24-37, 143 passing yards, no passing touchdowns, no rushing touchdowns either, but he did have 4 carries for 38 yards and was the team's leading rusher, which has been consistent all year long. Speaking of that, his 2 running backs might as well not even have a job at this point. First off, Garrett Goshek, 9 carries, 35 yards, and 2 receptions for 13 yards. And Madre London, 2 carries for 7 yards and 3 receptions for 9 yards. They just really don't do anything out there. I think I could run the ball better. Alex, I think you need to go ahead and suit up and try to run the ball because this Maulers team definitely did not have a running game this season. Moving on to their wide receiver room, wide receiver Isaiah Henney, 8 receptions, 55 yards, and a carry for 13 yards. Wide receiver Ishmael Hyman, 3 receptions for 18 yards. And really, no one else was able to get open. They didn't pass the ball well in this game. They ran the ball better for the most part, but, you know, it was really just Troy Williams just trying to do it all. And to that point, you know, their offense did not have any success whatsoever. They were only able to kick 4 field goals. So, you know, Chris Blewett, you know, really just did everything for this team. Pretty much Luis Aguilar, you know, kind of what he did for the Stars is that, you know, they didn't win the game. Moving on to the defense, which, you know, was pretty dominant in this game. They had some big plays. But if you look at the stats, it doesn't really look that way. Only 2 sacks, 3 tackles for losses, 3 passes defended, and a fumble recovery. But both linebackers, you talk about Keonve Tizino, 13 tackles, 9 solo tackles, and then linebacker Reuben Foster, 7 tackles, 3 solo tackles, a sack, and a tackle for loss. I mean, those guys really got it done. It's just the fact that their offense is nowhere to be found. It was nowhere to be found this whole season. And I personally just feel terrible for Troy Williams. And another thing to note, Josh Simmons, the return man on kickoff returns for the Maulers, was held to 95 kickoff return yards, and he averages and that's a 19 yard average. And for a guy who's been so explosive all season long, you expected him to have way more, probably up in the higher hundreds, maybe into the 200 yard range. But, you know, for the most part, you know, the Stallions had good coverage on kickoffs, which, you know, kind of mitigated what he was able to do. And Horace Kicker Chris Blewett, he went 4 out of 5 on field goals with the long and 55. Really, he did all this work for the team. So it's pretty sad watching your kicker do all the work.
Yeah, you talk about the Stallions. Going into this game, I'm pretty sure all three of us would have had them as a favorite, and they definitely showed that. Like you mentioned, Nathan, a little bit rough start in that first quarter. But it really was the fact that the Ballers were making them play their game for the majority of that first half. Yeah, Alex McGee really struggling, but he did come in and do great things. Really didn't play very poorly. I think he played an amazing game, very little mistakes. That fumble he had was a little bit idiotic when he was running backwards about 15 yards and just threw the ball up in the air and whatever. But lights up performance from him. The running back duo, once again, played very well, helped him out when he needed to. Surprising to see Deion Kane play the way he did, especially the way he's been struggling with drops really all year. But he had multiple contested catches in the end zone, and there was a lot of comparisons on Twitter and stuff like that saying he looked like Megatron. I don't want to go that far, but he played an amazing game. Jay Sternberger continued to be the safety blanket for Alex Magoo. Davion Davis, once again, you know, didn't have a 100-yard game like we're accustomed to, but still played a great game. And that defense was really surprising to me. I kind of pointed out last week how they gave it the most yards in the league on average per game. And then you pointed out, Nathan, how they really don't break, though. They don't give up like a third least amount of points for a team. So, and it showed in this game, they let the Maulers get down the field multiple times. But when they got into inside the 30-yard line, they really didn't break. They forced them to make terrible plays and stuff like that. And it really came down to the defensive line played amazing. You had Willie Yarbrough, Keyshawn Camp, D'Andre Tillman. They really got after the quarterback. And that really comes down to their effort. And then the fact that the Maulers offensive line can't even block me rushing the passer. Moving on to the Mars offensive line, though, Troy Williams had absolutely no help. It felt like every play he was getting absolutely blown up in the backfield. There was somebody in his face or something. And he really played I think he played a great game considering the circumstances. I know his stats don't reflect it, but he really left it all on the field with the stats. And you got the running backs. Was expecting a little bit more from them considering the entirety of the game. It really felt like they were trying to run the ball, run the clock. And they did in the first half, but when they went down, they couldn't. And that really ruined that. And the running backs did not give him a lot. The wide receivers really disappointed. Isaiah Henney had 55 yards. But outside of that, I mean, you look at Josh Simmons in the receiving game, who's really been a weapon for Troy Williams, had -3 receiving yards. So I think it really comes down to the Mars offense being pretty poor. But it also is the fact that the Stallions defense played an amazing game. And I honestly think they played better than the Mars defense. And then look at the Maulers defense. Like you mentioned, Nathan, the stats didn't reflect it, but I think they played the best they could. It just came down to the fact their offense could not get in the end zone. And just look at the special teams, like you pointed out again, Nathan. I said in our backyard ball video we did that I thought they would be the X factor of this game for the Maulers if they were to win. And it turns out that the Stallions were able to mitigate that with their kickoff returns and their punts. Josh Simmons was really ineffective. And then you had Isaiah Henney on punts that had 0 yards returning punts. So I think the Stallions played an amazing game, really mistake-free outside of the Magoo fumble, and that's really the reason they ended up winning.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, just to mitigate what Alex said just then, it's like outside of the Magoo fumble, Alex Magoo played absolutely outstanding. We've been saying it all year long. I think Birmingham's by far the most complete team and the deepest team in this league, and they really showed it here. And it's like the Maulers, Troy Williams does it all. He's the guy. He gets no help, and the stats don't reflect it. And it's hard for him to put these stats up and get them into the end zone, which they were able to drive the ball. Just like Alex mentioned just then, they were able to get it inside the 40, inside the 30-yard line, but they were not able to put the ball in the end zone, which is you're not going to be able to win games, especially when Alex Magoo's throwing 4 touchdowns and Deion Kane's absolutely mossing players in the end zone. So I think it's a fantastic game, a complete game from Birmingham, and mistake-free, just like you said, Alex, outside of the fumble. But, I mean, that's really all there is to it. And Birmingham held their own, just like y'all mentioned, with Simmons, held to 95 kickoff return yards. He's been one of the most, if not the most explosive return man all year. And then Isaiah Henney, only 1 punt return for 0 yards. You played a complete game on all in every single phase, and a very, very clean game, and it was very, very good.
Yeah, going back, you know, I think we need to talk about, you know, the whole fumble situation for Alex Pugh and that whole play, because originally it was called a touchdown after, you know, the big lineman recovered the fumble and he was running and he handed it off to his linebacker. But of course it got called back because it was seen as a forward lateral. Do you agree with the calling on that play, or do you think they missed something?
I think that was the right call. I mean, the way when I saw it happen live action, I mean, I thought that definitely was like a forward pass. I like the call. I like them calling it back, but I also like them letting the play continue and letting him go to the end zone. Cause you've seen in the NFL stuff like that. Usually when something like that would happen, they'd blow the play dead or something. So I was like, let it finish it out and review.
That's how refs are taught. Like, let the play go out and you could always go back and change it in review and that sort of thing. And I'm glad they did that. I agree with Alex there. When I saw it live, I was like, well, it does look like a forward, but then it, during the review, I was like, well, you know, probably not. So it was a funny play to watch though.
It was, I mean, I was mad.
Oh, I was mad too, but it was, you know, looking back on it now after the Stallions are crowned champions, I was like, okay, that was kind of funny.
Alex McGee did a little too much on that play. You know, it was bound to happen given the number of times he just runs around and runs in circles in the backfield. So,
yeah, it's not the main reason the Maulers lost either. I mean, they went for it on fourth down inside, like, but their own 30. Okay,
that was just, you know, stupid play calling. I was like, there's 7 minutes left. Your defense is playing well, but you're going to go ahead and go for it on your own 40. Like, are you kidding me?
Ray Horton was too busy talking to the refs to realize what he just called. I mean, dude was yelling at the refs the entire fourth quarter, like they were going to help him out or something.
He said some words, all right.
Can't repeat those on here.
All right, I think that's going to do it for our USFL. Finally getting out of here with that. Definitely going to miss it. And we got a few more months until, you know, we get back into football. College football is coming up soon, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Need it.
Well, what do y'all think is going to happen next season with the USFL since they just renewed it for a third season?
You know,
well, you got to think about the Stallions.
Three-peat?
Yeah. Early prediction right now. Three-peat.
Three-peat?
I'm thinking, wow.
You think Alex Pugh is a quarterback, or you think he's going to be in the NFL playing somewhere?
You know, it's kind of hard to think that he wouldn't be in the NFL after the performance he just had this season. Yeah. But also, I don't know if teams agree with, like, how he plays, his, like, play style with running around and kind of scrambling like that. I don't know if they agree with that or not. But you know, if he does end up leaving, I'm sure J.M.R. Smith will be back and hopefully healthy. But really the big question is, do they keep their hub cities like they've been doing, or is each team going to get their own city and their own stadium? I don't know if that's going to be able to happen yet. But you know, as far as right now, I think the hub cities worked well this season. I mean, it was definitely different, you know, not having every game in Birmingham to go watch.
Yeah, it was different. That's a big money question that they need to have answered before, you know, they need to start asking that question now and that sort of stuff. So, but about the Alex Magoo question, y'all asked, I agree with Nathan. It's hard to think that after somebody who just won the MVP of the league and how good he was and how some of the special plays he made and that sort of thing, it's hard to think he's not going to be in the NFL, but I do agree with Nathan. It's hard to see that fit, and you got it, but it only takes one team to be able to have that fit if they wanted to bring him in as a backup quarterback or something like that.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think for me going into this game, I was kind of skeptical of Alex Magoo because you look at the USFL defenses, they're not great. But going into the championship game, playing the Ballers defense, which is arguably an NFL-type defense, I thought he was going to – he may have took a step back or something, but he showed that he didn't care, and he played one of the best games for a quarterback in the USFL championship so far. I think he could be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I don't think there's 30 quarterbacks better than him at that level. You look at Jimmy G on the Raiders. I think he's better than him. I don't think there's a question about that. I think there's multiple more we can think of just sitting here, but I think Alex McGee deserves to at least be a backup in the NFL the way he played this season.
Nathan, Saints?
You know, and Derek Carr we trust right now. We'll see how that experiment works out, but you know, not too high on it.
Back to Jameis?
Oh, no. I don't know what to answer anymore. Drew Brees, come out of retirement, please.
It's so nice to actually know who your team's quarterback's going to be.
Look at you, Ian Book, Nathan.
At least y'all have Bryce Young, you know.
Yes. Yes, at least we do. All right, that'll wrap up our show today. I appreciate everyone for listening. See y'all next time.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.